You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hope you had a great weekend, everybody. It's hour two on this Monday. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. This is our official debut. We had a soft rollout on Peacock, but this is the first official day. If you're watching the program, this is the only place to get it with our great friends at Peacock. Also, we say good morning to our TV partners, radio partners, and also those on chat row. Tyler, the moderator, taking care of you today. Got a poll question, play of the day, stat of the day, and best and worst of the weekend. Your chance to give us your thoughts on what you saw that you liked, you didn't like. The Jacksonville Jaguars have released Leonard Fournette. They also traded defensive end Yannick Ngakoue to the Vikings on Sunday for a couple of draft picks. And this probably isn't going to be a league-changing trade, but it's interesting how fast a franchise can change. You know, the final nail in the coffin of the 2017 version of the team that almost went to the Super Bowl is basically getting rid of Ngakoue. Because if you recall, the Jags came close to knocking off the Patriots in the title game. If Blake Bortles' pass had been just a foot higher, might have cleared Stephon Gilmore's hand and changed everything. Now six Pro Bowl players from that defense are gone. Ngakoue, Jalen Ramsey, Bouye, Calais Campbell, Malik Jackson, Telvin Smith. It's really a prime example of how the salary cap puts so much pressure on teams to make all the right moves, and you have a window of about 4 years. One or two missteps and everything falls apart. The Jags have four picks in the first round of the 2021 draft. Couple of elite quarterbacks there. We'll see how the 2020 season plays out. Teams have the ability to rebound quickly in the NFL, and brighter days could be ahead for Jacksonville. A brighter day would come in the form of Trevor Lawrence. Also, there is rumor out there now. It's not a report. It's just a rumor that maybe Dabo Sweeney, let's say Jacksonville gets the number one pick and they take Trevor Lawrence, that Dabo Sweeney might be interested in taking the Jacksonville job right now. I don't think that's an official report anywhere. I know Mike Tannenbaum, former front office man in the NFL working for the mothership, said that. But until it's an actual report, Dabo Sweeney, to me, has got a great opportunity, a great situation where you can stay there for the next 20 years. And it used to be, well, you had to measure yourself. I got to go to the NFL. All the great coaches are in the NFL. Why is it the NFL is always studying college football, not the other way around? Because there are a lot of brilliant minds in college football. Because change in football is happening in college, not in the NFL. It starts in college. And I know that this is a hiccup. Maybe it's just a one-year aberration as far as college football goes. But if I'm any of these marquee coaches, I don't think this helps expedite my lust for coaching in the NFL. You know, Ohio State with Ryan Day. Stay at Ohio State. I mean, Jim Harbaugh is staying at Michigan, but I don't know if he's going to have the final decision of how long he stays. You know, Saban, of course, is going to stay with Alabama. Lincoln Riley, it always feels like he's that next coach. He's the next Sean McVay. And I understand it because he might say, look, I can only go so far at Oklahoma going against Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, a couple of these other schools. But if you pencil yourself into the Final Four, at least you're in the conversation there. And he's getting marquee quarterbacks. He's had quite a run here. And probably with a few on the roster right now, Spencer Rattler, I think, is his number one quarterback. But you've had a couple quarterbacks that preceded him. But I think Lincoln Riley might be that guy that you look at and go, maybe next year he is coaching in the NFL. But, you know, Jacksonville was seven picks in the first four rounds of the 2021 draft. You could do some damage with that. But here's the thing I always bring up to you. It's one thing to have first-round draft picks. It's another thing to draft well with those first-round draft picks. Look at the Cleveland Browns. Because for years, it'd be like, hey, the Browns got two first-round picks. Okay, what do they do with that? Nothing. And then meanwhile, Baltimore. Baltimore's got one in its middle to late first round. And they somehow pull out a Hall of Famer. That's the difference. We got draft picks. I want to know who's drafting with my draft picks. That's the key. This program brought to you by the great folks at Rock Auto, rockauto.com. All the parts your car or truck will ever need. Founded by it's a family business founded by automotive engineers back in 1999. Two goals in mind. First, giving direct access to all the parts information hidden in the computers and catalogs behind the parts store counter. Second, making the parts affordable by offering reliably low prices at rockauto.com. Choose the part brands, prices, features you want anytime 24/7. RockAuto.com has a lot of the parts you've been told dealer only are no longer available. Parts are delivered right to your home or office. Don't waste time and money hunting for parts, phoning, driving, waiting in lines. And go to RockAuto.com. Make sure you tell them we sent you all the parts your car, truck, whatever need at RockAuto.com. Had some information first hour if you're just joining us about the Big Ten. And I'm told it's a real long shot. The source I had who broke the news with the Big Ten and Pac-12 not playing this season is the same one who reached out and said had a little more information on the Big Ten. They're trying to piece together something after Thanksgiving. And this was my thought process all along. Could you have students go until Thanksgiving and then you have football after that? Like, is there a possibility that you could bubble your football team after Thanksgiving? And if you want to play 10 games, 8 games, at least you get a season in, you'll get some revenue there. Maybe you get 15 or 20,000 fans that are able to go to the games. But what you're going to find out is there'll be a lot of players who are going to opt out. If they play football starting in January, I know they're talking about Thanksgiving, but I was told maybe January. But this is a mess from what I'm told. And the story leaked on Friday, and I was told Wisconsin leaked the story. They want to put pressure on the Big Ten and the commissioner to try to be able to salvage something here, but I'm told it's a real long shot. Also, the best wide receiver in the draft, Ja'Marr Chase out of LSU, he has decided that he is not going to play this year for LSU. And I was told that if he had Joe Burrow still there, he would have stayed. He could not improve upon his numbers from last year and is just going to get ready for the combine. I think you're going to see a few more marquee players do the same thing. Yeah, Paul.
Going back to Friday when the buzz was that the Big Ten was going to play deep in winter, you know, basically December, January, Thanksgiving games. A lot of people thought there would be, you know, U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis covered, Ford Field in Detroit, Lucas Oil in Indianapolis, some type of rotating dome situation to play those games in a controlled environment.
Yeah. I don't know, you know, because Ohio State's going to play at Ohio State, and that's outdoors. And from what I'm told, you know, these players at skilled positions don't want to be put in a position where every weekend it's inclement weather. Because it's one thing to get your football season in, and it ends Thanksgiving weekend in the Big Ten. And then your Big Ten title game is indoors in Indianapolis. You're not playing in December and January. Big difference there. Now, I'd love to watch it. Don't get me wrong, but that's a big difference there. The passing of the great Georgetown head coach, John Thompson, died at the age of 78. We'll hear from Jim Boeheim, Syracuse head coach. He'll join us coming up in an hour from now. Bucks close out the Magic. Clips close out the Mavs. Lakers close out the Blazers. And now we have Heat, Bucks tonight, Rockets, and the Thunder. Yannick Ngakoue going to the Minnesota Vikings. The NFL starts in 10 days. We'll check in with the Lakers coming up in about 10 minutes. And, you know, there's stories about LeBron James and his role in that players-only meeting where we were told initially that he basically didn't say anything and got up and walked out. Now we're hearing that that wasn't the case, that he had some choice words, parting words for his fellow players, and it didn't go well. Now, everything looked good with the, you know, this last game with the Lakers closing out the Blazers. I mentioned in the first hour about the Mavs. Their window of opportunity is now open for business to win a championship. But can you add some pieces here? Can you say to Seth Curry, we're going to make you an even larger role player on this team? Who wants to play with Luka? Ball dominant guard? Before you say, well, of course people are going to want to. It's going to take a special player either at the end of their career or maybe in the beginning where the embryonic stages of being a star. But, you know, Luka, now you got Porzingis who's out and hopefully, you know, this is meniscus surgery. But, man, Kawhi Leonard was fun to watch yesterday. That's just one of those where that was big boy basketball. A big difference there. You know, Luka's a great player and maybe the future, the face of the sport. But when Kawhi is able to do that, that's when you see a big difference. It's not exciting. As I liken him to, he's Miles Davis. He's Coltrane. He's never in a hurry. He's fluid. He flows. Sometimes, you know, very little emotion, enthusiasm. But he gets it done. Yeah, McLovin.
Yeah, fun. I'm not sure that's a word that applies. Vince Carter's fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's brilliantly boring. You know, you can just watch and go, okay. You know, it's the same thing as jazz. Like, people say, oh, do you hear that? And I'll go, no. Like, I'll listen to Miles Davis or Thelonious Monk, and I'll go, I don't get it. Like, there are just certain things that you just, and then we try to fake it. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, boy, that's awesome, yeah. And I'll go, I can understand Kenny G. I can't understand, you know, Miles Davis. Although Miles Davis, I can. Yes, Tom.
Have you ever done that at a museum, acting fascinated about what just looks like a couple of stripes of paint across, and just staring at it for like a half hour and looking at it from different angles?
Well, there's an artist, I think it's Rothko. And I've been around Rothko paintings, and they go for like $60, $70 million. And I'll just stare at it, and I'll say to my wife, I don't get it. And then she was an art major in college at NYU. And she'd go, oh, you don't see that? And I'll go, no, hon, no. It feels like if you gave me a little bit of time, I might be able to do that in an afternoon. Yeah, Steve.
I just watched this movie about an art critic.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting because I'm not even remotely educated in art or anything like that. But they, like, at one point in the movie, they say, can you describe the painting? And he was just like, oh, it is a statement on life. It's the setting sun, but the sun is that lifetime setting, and it is full of anguish and all this stuff. And all it is like an orange blob in the middle of something, and it's a statement on life. And this, I'm like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
What?
Yeah, yeah, Paul.
You know when you're getting ready, the Rothko paintings, you know when you're getting ready to paint a room and you do like four different test samples on your wall, and there's medium blue, and then there's eggshell, and then there's a darkish blue, and then there's a Newport blue, and they're all sitting there. And just for a minute, if you took a picture of that, that's Rothko paintings. And that's where this guy got started.
I went to Harvard a couple of years ago and went to their art museum up there, and Rothko did a version of the Harvard H. And they have it hanging in there. And you just, there's certain artists where you go, I think I could have done that. Like Pollock. I do think, like, I've spilled paint.
Right.
Like, I've spilled paint, but apparently not that well. You know? Where Pollock would spill it, and I'd get yelled at doing something like that. Meanwhile, you know, that's priceless art. Yes, McLaughlin.
I can't believe I work with you Philistines.
Wow.
90s Pearl could have made up stuff about all these on a date. By the way, I don't get it. Would you explain to me why the Mona Lisa was special? That's one that I never understood. Remember you saw a documentary or something?
Well, I think you're told it's special, therefore it's special. It's like when you have a wine or a cigar and somebody say, oh, yeah, that is great. And then you'll take a sip and you go, yeah. And then you have no idea what you're doing. I mean, the Mona Lisa, you know, there's a fascination because there's stories behind it. And maybe the most brilliant man in our history, you know, Da Vinci. But the Mona Lisa is fascinating. Is it Da Vinci in drag, basically? I don't know. But you go and you see it and you go, that's it? Yes, Todd.
But could you ever be comfortable, like in a museum, with all these people around you that seem to be really fascinated by it and actually verbalize and say, I don't get it?
No.
You could whisper that to your wife, but imagine saying that as opposed to acting like that you get it too. You don't want to feel left out. I'm intelligent like you guys. I think it's amazing.
Let's get to a couple of phone calls, then we'll take a break, check in with the Lakers in the bubble. Wynn in North Carolina. Hi, Wynn. What do you have for me today?
I'm doing great. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
I'm watching you on the new channel,
Peacock,
and you still have an awesome show, man. It's really great.
Well, thank you.
So that was my weak attempt at humor. Two bets of the weekend. Everybody played a Major League Baseball game yesterday.
Yay.
Had number 42 on their jersey.
Yeah.
in honor of Jackie Robinson, who, in my mind, was one of the classiest and bravest people in public life in my lifetime. Secondly, Gary Sanchez, who is the Yankee catcher, of course, who's slumping, he is the first Yankee in the history of the franchise to hit a Grand Slam home run while being a designated hitter in an extra inning game.
All right. Well, thank you, Wynn.
Wowzers.
Well, by the way, I haven't heard from the Yankee fans. Remember a couple of weeks ago where I said, you know, if Giancarlo Stanton wants to prove that he's great, just stay healthy. Or Aaron Judge, stay healthy. And then you see where those guys are on the injured list there. Let me see. John in Denver. Hi, John. What do you have for me today?
Good morning, DP.
Good morning.
Best horse of the weekend. Best Jamal 50 Murray, just dropping buckets. And the worst of the weekend, 2020, just a tough weekend of losses with Clifford Robinson, yeah. Chadwick Boseman, and Coach Thompson.
Yeah. Thank you, John. Yeah. Chadwick Boseman, no matter what role, he always made it better. And such diversification. And he was only 43 years of age. Colonoscopy, everybody. Don't wait till you're 50. Never understood that. Yeah, when you get to be 50, colonoscopy. He died of colon cancer. He's battling it for 4 years. Don't wait till you're 50. Once you get to 50, do it every couple of years. Because I got one coming up. My wife's doing hers tomorrow. Make sure you do it. Alan in South Carolina. Alan.
Hey, BP.
Hey, bud.
Got a best and worst for you.
Okay.
Is the cone of silence broken? Why didn't you guys drop the curtain during Fritzy's bagel story?
Oh, no, I couldn't do that, though, Alan, because...
That's my worst of the week, Fritzy's bagel story. And my most excellent of the weekend, the new Bill and Ted movie. It was really good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Keanu Reeves is one of my top guests of all time. Came in, no entourage, looked like $1 million, low key. Just, I can't say enough about how down to earth and professional he was. Any success he has, man, I applaud it. And so hopefully he does well with that movie. Why didn't we bring down the cone of silence on Fritzy?
There's a mixed reaction to Fritzy's segment about onion bagels on Friday. People have thought it was one of the worst moments of their lives in show history, yeah. Or they thought it was the best moment of the week. It was classic. It was fantastic. The reactions are extreme.
Yeah, I was still scarred by it over the weekend. Like, I just didn't know what to think of it.
That would have been cruel if you guys would have put that down. If I was already hyperventilating, just telling the bagel story, if you would have brought that down on me, I don't know what would happen.
No, I thought it would have been unfair to you because it was clearly important to you. And if you missed it, you can go back and listen to it if you want to. It was in the final 15 minutes of the show on Friday.
It was fascinating.
And the number of people say, is Fritzy, is he really like that? And I go, yes. Yes, he is. Was he putting on an act? No, he's not.
Is he on medication?
Well, I don't know if you're on medication.
Talking to someone.
But are you on medication?
I am currently not on any medication.
And are you talking to somebody?
Just my wife. And that's why she doesn't look forward to me coming
home. She's talking to somebody.
She needs
medication.
She definitely does.
Somebody to
check her blood pressure every couple hours.
Yeah. All right. We'll check in with the Lakers. More phone calls. We'll give you our best and worst of the weekend. And Jim Boeheim, top of the hour, on his reminiscing of John Thompson, former Georgetown coach, who passed away this morning. 20 after the hour here. This is the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. This is the last day to get your submission in for the Next Great Podcast contest, nextgreatpodcast.com. We have, I think, 1,300 people who have entered, but don't let that discourage you. You want an opportunity to have people hear your idea. We're giving you that chance. We're going to select up to 10 semifinalists, give them $1,000, produce a pilot episode, And then the entire radio world will be voting on their favorite podcast. And then whoever wins, I'm going into business with you. Last day is today, nextgreatpodcast.com. Jim Boeheim, top of the hour, as he reminisces about John Thompson, the former Georgetown coach who passed away. Dan Wojcicki is the NBA writer for the LA Times, national NBA writer for the LA Times, also covering the Clippers in the bubble, and he joins us now. Dan, good morning. How are you? How's morale?
It's okay on my end, Dan. You know, I think guys were happy to be back on the court in the last 24, 48 hours. I think there was a little sense of relief, and then I think a feeling that of refocus, and ultimately I think that a sense of mental fatigue that kind of went away a little bit. Players and coaches all talked about that, and sort of in that strike period, that it was in addition to obviously refocusing on the social justice initiatives to also just kind of take a step back, because the guys that have been here for 7-8 weeks have been going either every day or every other day with games and practices, and that's a lot of work. And I think people needed to breathe a little bit.
What did you make of what Paul George had to say about kind of being in a bad spot in the bubble?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's what I've heard from other players. It's what I heard from players on the way in. I've heard from team psychologists and different staff saying that they thought that would be an area of competitive advantage. If you can be the team that figures out the best way to kind of crack that code and keep players engaged in a situation where, you know, the typical pieces in your life that you usually go to for perspective, whether it's your friends, your family, your children, a great meal, all of that different stuff, you know, it's gone. Like, you have to reestablish all of these different routines and everything like that here, because the rules are completely different. You're isolated, less isolated now as families are starting to kind of move in. But it was a grind for a lot of players. And I think especially if you have a bad day, there's not a whole lot to do other than just kind of look at your phone and stare at the mentions. And I think that's something that certainly happened to Paul George.
What did you learn from the Clippers this past series against the Mavs?
Kawhi Leonard is a beast. Like, and I think we should know this, right? Obviously, but it's funny. You watch that Clipper team over the course of the season, and the season feels like it's been like 4 years long. But the big kind of complaint about the Clippers all along is like, okay, this team is building big picture, big picture, big picture. When are they going to take on the little picture? Like, will they be ready when that moment comes? And I think particularly in game four against the Mavs, when they blow that 20-point lead, you're like, are they too casual? Is that who this team is? Like, you know, did they reach for the light switch and it wasn't there? That's not going to – I think we should trust Kawhi Leonard. I think he knows what he's doing. You know, for all the talk about how great Luka was in that series, I mean, the Kawhi numbers, Dan, if you just look at them, it's, you know, 54% from the field. I mean, Kawhi didn't shoot 30% from three in this series. He was still 54% from the field, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, 33 points a game. You know, never had a game under 29 points, like just 29 to 36 points every game. Playing good defense. Like, this is a dude that I think we should trust.
I don't worry about him. It's everybody else that I don't know who's going to be consistent, where Paul George can reappear and then disappear as well. I don't know about the role players here. I don't know. There's a little bit more fragility to the Clippers than I think that we want to acknowledge. We look at the Lakers because it's in vogue to go, hey, let's talk about all the Laker problems. The Clippers are probably a better team than the Lakers. It's just you have LeBron and Anthony Davis who would cancel out Paul George and Kawhi.
Yeah, Dan, I'll trot out this example that I've been using, I think, since the first month of the season. I've always felt like the Lakers are like the $100 bill that you have in your pocket. You can go take that somewhere, you spend it, I think you know exactly what it is. And the Clippers are $100 in stock. It's not quite as tangible. You're like, maybe it'll be worth something way more down the line, or it could go belly up, because we don't know, right? Injuries have completely adjusted. I mean, I think this is a team that's still played less than 20 games together with its core. Injuries have blown all of that out. You know, you can look at this series and say, man, Montrezl Harrell was really disappointing. And he was, right? For a guy who's going to be sixth man of the year. He also hadn't played basketball in like over 2 weeks before the first game of the playoffs, and they just dropped him in and played him. You know, you had Patrick Beverley not on the court. You had Lou Williams still working back from, you know, leaving the bubble. I think it's it is interesting. It's like, on one hand, like, they've been able to survive all this stuff, and it's pretty remarkable that they were the second seed in the West despite being as banged up as they were. And it speaks to their overall level of talent. But you're right. It does feel like there's something lacking, something that's not quite as tangible with them. And it's tricky. You know, they're going to lose Marcus Morris Dan at some point here. Not, well, he may get suspended down the line too, but he's going to leave the bubble at some point to be with his family for the birth of a child. You know, who knows what else is going to happen. I will say, though, I do think in this series, I think three role players in particular showed real promise. Ivica Zubac is a good player. Yeah. Like, that guy is a good center, not just a put him out there and, you know, like, hopefully he gets out of the way kind of guy. No, he was very valuable. I still think Lou Williams is a guy that it's just like he can get to the basket or draw a foul at any time he wants to. And Landry Shamet is an interesting player in the sense, you know, one of the guys that they got last year when they traded Tobias Harris at the deadline, a second-year player, was really good in the playoffs last year, did something very difficult this season, Dan. He took a step backwards. I think this hurt Boston, actually, last year. When you've got a bunch of young players ascending, and then all of a sudden you say, okay, your role is going to diminish drastically, that's hard. That's not usually how it works for young players, right? You keep getting more and more responsibility each season. Landry Shamet had his responsibility cut this year. Less shots, less minutes. With Patrick Beverley down, the big adjustment that Doc Rivers made in this series, we put Landry Shamet, not Reggie Jackson, in that starting lineup, and he played pretty well.
We're talking to Dan Wojcicki. He is a national NBA writer for the LA Times and covering the Clippers in the bubble. Do you know Kawhi Leonard?
I mean, as much as you can, being around him for, I was, you know, around Toronto, I would say, for 20 games last year. And then, you know, being around him this year, I mean, we've spoken. I've seen him smile a few times. I've seen him laugh.
Does he care about being a star, Dan?
I mean, I think certainly to a certain extent, right? Like, if,
or famous, maybe that's a better word.
Yeah, I don't think the famous part. I mean, look, I think he wants the power and sort of the clout that comes with being the level of player he is, right? Like, he is going to set the tone for the team that he is on, right? When you're a great player and you're dealing with what he's dealing with physically, right? Like this mysterious sort of leg injury that is going to keep him from playing back-to-backs and probably for the rest of his career, unless there's some sort of surgery or something down the line. That doesn't always sit well around teams when you've got guys playing through ankle sprains, playing through different injuries, when you're having a guy take maintenance days, right? Like, this was not super easy in Toronto. It ruffled feathers there. It ruffled feathers in the Clippers locker room, I think. But he's earned sort of the right to do it. And it's sort of to say, I think he wants to be like, no, like, you're going to trust me. Like, my way is going to work. That's why I kind of go back to that. Like, fall in line behind me and, like, you're going to do that. I think that matters to him. Obviously, winning, tremendously important to him. Family is very important to him. A big part of the reason why he ended up in a Clipper uniform was to be back in Los Angeles. But, you know, it's hard to crack. You know, you heard kind of out of the bubble meetings and stuff that Kawhi Leonard was somebody who stood up and spoke, which is, you know, a real eye-opening thing. It's hard to imagine, you know, in a room with LeBron James and some of the other more high-profile players in this league, that Kawhi Leonard would be a voice that would be notable. But I think that's sort of the power in being the quiet guy, right? Is once you say something, it carries more weight.
If I said we were betting lunch, Lakers or Clippers playing for the title, who would you pick?
I'd still trust LeBron James, I think, ultimately, to figure it out. But how expensive a lunch are we talking? I think
In-N-Out burger.
Okay. In that case, I can be a little more bold. I think the Clippers are the better team. I agree with you. I think they have a better roster up and down. I think they have more talent. And talent usually wins out in a series. It's so close because every time the Lakers step on the court, they might have the two best players. And that can be true in virtually any series. And it's such an advantage, Dan.
Good to talk to you, Dan. And good luck the rest of the way in the bubble. And we'd love to reach out to you again.
All right, let's do it.
Thank you, Dan. That's Dan Wojcicki. He covers the NBA for the LA Times and in particular, the Clippers in the bubble. Yeah, I'm still waiting for the Clippers to kind of come together and make it all work here. But they have time. I just think that they were dangerously close to getting down 3-1 to the Mavs. Now, you lose Porzingis. They were roughing up Luka. And then Kawhi acts like Kawhi when you need him to the most. I mean, to have that guy that you just say, I know he'll come through. He's a given. He comes through. It's such a great luxury. Because I don't know about Paul George. I don't know about Lou Williams. I don't know about the rest of these guys. I'm just not sure. But what a luxury when you go, when the game is on the line, that guy gets bigger. A lot of guys get small when the game's on the line. You know, when the ball gets swung to you, then what do you do with it? Kawhi wants that. He's comfortable with that. And that is as a coach, Doc Rivers has got to go. Worst case scenario, all else fails, get the ball to Kawhi. And playing defense as well. He had one of those all-around great games that you want. In a closeout game, that's what you want. Yes, Eden.
Is that something you're born with or something you can learn? Because, I mean, a certain part of it could speak to, you know, preparation and practice and, you know, just confidence on the ball from, you know, just so many hours of playing.
I'm going to guess it's both because, where Luka has been playing with grown men since he was 14. So he was ready for the NBA at age 19 to play against these guys. But I don't know if he had something that was already in his DNA that said, hey, you're good in the moment, big in the moment. And with Kawhi, because we didn't know what kind of draft pick he was. We thought he was going to be a defensive player. I mean, Spurs got him in the middle of the first round. They weren't quite sure what they had. And I think because he doesn't have that type of personality that lets you know, it was probably harder to be able to read that and say, hey, I can count on this guy. But at some point, the Spurs became his. Then he goes to the Raptors. The Raptors became his. Then he goes to the Clippers. The Clippers became his. There's something about it for a guy who doesn't say much that he's the Pied Piper, that they do follow him. But to not have that demonstrative personality that we're so used to that, like that's the guy we can identify with. It's the guy who's just Tim Duncan. This is what drove Kevin Garnett crazy from what I'm told. Because Tim Duncan didn't give a bleep about Kevin Garnett talking trash to him. And KG, from what I'm told, would talk trash to him. And it bothered Kevin Garnett so much. And Duncan knew that. He was just like, he's really getting upset. He wants me to react. And he's playing those games there. Like, there's just something about that where you go, the silent assassin is the guy that I always worried about. It's the guy who's demonstrative right out in front. And you're like, okay, I see that. I can recognize that. And I can challenge that. It's the guy you're like, what's he thinking? Why isn't he showing any emotion? Why is he not nervous? He's not sweating. Those are the guys that I get concerned about. Yeah, Paul.
You're seen asked about guys developing, athletes developing the alpha dog mentality early. Remember a bunch of years ago we had Larry Bird on and you asked, when were you like the man on your team? When did you get the green light to shoot? He goes, the sixth grade.
Sixth grade. At that point, you know, there's something special about me. He got the green light in sixth grade. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll give you our best and worst of the weekend. More phone calls as well. Glad to have you part of the program. Back after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. More phone calls coming up, best and worst of the weekend. We will give you ours. I'm going to start with Todd, who ended his week last week on a bad note because of a bagel situation. So, Todd, best and worst of the weekend, Todd.
Best of the weekend, being able to go back and forth Saturday night between Blazers-Lakers Game 5 and the first college football game of the season, Central Arkansas-Austin Peay. It was nice to have those options, so that was a very fun Saturday night. Worst, in the second game of a doubleheader with the Yankees Friday night, Mets shortstop Ahmed Rosario hits a two-run walk-off homer against Aroldis Chapman at Yankee Stadium. The Mets were the designated home team due to a coronavirus-related postponement at Citi Field. So the visiting team hits a seventh inning walk-off home run.
And I'm watching, and you could see Aroldis Chapman, who gave up the home run, he's asking for another ball because they're at home, but they're not the home team. And the Mets weren't even sure that they had just won the game because they're seven-inning doubleheaders here as well. McLovin, best and worst of the weekend.
I don't know if this is best or worst, but I found a real estate show. Now, you guys are big real estate guys. Million Dollar Beach House. Yep. It's about selling these houses to the Hamptons.
Yep.
I consumed it in about 4 hours.
Yep.
I just said, kids, get out of the house. Those houses were unbelievable. What is it about real estate shows? Is it the houses, the personalities, everything?
Well, I think we want to see how the other half lives, like these billionaires. What kind of homes do they have? They're selling Sunset. I've watched a little bit of that.
Sister show to this show. Yeah.
Yeah. So Selling Sunset and, of course, Million Dollar Listings, New York and L.A. Yes.
Selling Sunset, a little more reality show-ish.
Yes, it is. A lot more reality show-ish.
A little more drama.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sitting there.
Yeah. It's more about relationships and then they sell real estate. Not the other way around. Yes, McLovin.
For $35 million, I can find us a place in the Hamptons if everyone wants to join in here for a weekend house. Mm. Unbelievable.
And did you have a worst of the week?
Worst is no NFL preseason. I told you NFL preseason was awesome. Now everybody misses it. What do we overreact to? We have to overreact to practice reports. It's the worst.
Wait, when did you tell me preseason football was awesome?
Every year I come in and I see like Logan Thomas go 10 for 11 in a game and say he's the next real deal. And every time you tell me, don't overreact to preseason.
I know. Seton O'Connor, best and worst.
My best of the weekend, U.S. men's national player, Weston McKennie signing with Juventus. That's a big signing for an American player. I don't know that they've ever even had an American on play for them, but Juventus playing with Cristiano Ronaldo, they're obsessed with winning Champions League. He should get a lot of exposure there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just another U.S. player, you know, on a monster team, monster roster. That's pretty exciting.
Okay.
My holy crap of the weekend, which I don't know that we've ever done before, but we could start that, is did you see what the Manchester City offer, or like reported offer was to Lionel Messi?
Was it a billion?
It's like almost $900 million.
But it's
I don't know if that's true or not. Like, I don't really get the details of all of that. Oh, my God.
But isn't there a part of the deal that has to do with the MLS? And that's the interesting part, is you get 3 years of Messi there, and I don't know how old he would be. Like, don't you have to be at least 36 before you come to the MLS?
Well, I don't know. For $200 million a year, you might consider going a little earlier.
Yeah, but then he would leave and then spend 2 years with the MLS. Don't they have a sister franchise? So in 3 years, he'd be 36, right, Paulie?
Right on cue.
So 36, and then you get to go to the MLS.
Yeah, NYCFC.
Okay, so then he would go to New York City.
Yeah.
And then he would play soccer for 2 years for $1 billion.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Paulie, best and worst of the weekend.
Best of the weekend. I told my wife, 9 p.m. like you on Saturday night, we're watching a football game, first college football game of the season. She goes, oh, yeah, whatever. Yeah, I haven't watched a lot of football. I haven't watched a lot of sports this summer. And I put it on the screen, and I'm quietly sitting there. She sits down and sees Austin Peay versus Central Arkansas. She's no college football expert, but it wasn't even like Arkansas. It was Central Arkansas,
yeah.
And they may be better than Arkansas, by the way. She looked at me like, I'm going to let this one go because you haven't watched college football in a while.
Yeah, it was fun.
And then the worst of the weekend, Derwin James, the defensive back for the Chargers, a fantastic player. He's got a knee injury. It's not really sure how bad it is, but it's going to take him out for a little bit of time. He's just a...
These are my Chargers. It happens every year.
Yeah, you've had Ingram
Mike
get hurt.
Mike Williams got hurt.
Keenan Allen always.
Yeah. Hunter Henry gets hurt. Yes, McLovin.
And their Hard Knocks ratings are not good, too. I don't know.
I saw where Peter King said that he found Hard Knocks really interesting. And I'm like, okay. I don't think these are two exciting teams. That's plus you got two teams that have the color blue in it. I mean, it's not a guy. Is this Chargers camp? Is this the Rams camp? Like, I'm not really sure. And unless Sean McVay takes his shirt off, then there's not much excitement around here. Yeah, Paul.
Maybe from now on, Hard Knocks should react in the moment and just bring the entire crew to wherever the next story is. Imagine if there was like a big hubbub at a camp and they could just run over to Jacksonville and do a week there and then run over to Cleveland whenever things go weird.
I don't think Jacksonville would look too good today.
No. It'd be good TV.
It'd be like, let's get Gardner Minshew on. Who else can we get? I don't know. Get Gardner Minshew on. Yeah, McLovin.
You know that guy on Hard Knocks that you don't know if he's going to make the team and you root for him? That's the entire Jaguars roster. So,
Caleb in North Carolina is back. Caleb, what do you have for me today?
DT 65250. And yeah, just quick comment on Selling Sunset. Me and the girlfriend started watching that this weekend. And it really sucks, but I just can't stop watching. So definitely spent most of the day Saturday binge watching season one of that. But two best was one was the golf tournament this weekend. Really tough conditions, playing like a major championship. And then DJ rolling in a putt to force a playoff. And then John Rahm draining a bomb from 60 feet to win it. And then the two juggernauts of college football in Central Arkansas and Austin Peay kicking off the college football season was a great start.
Thank you, Caleb. Yeah, I watched the golf, and Dustin Johnson has to make a putt, I don't know, 30 feet or something crazy, just to get into a playoff with John Rahm. And then first hole, John Rahm from 60 feet with one of those double breakers. And right in the center of the jar, ended up winning. And that's Olympia Fields. And I played with Jim McMahon and Bo Jackson. That's when we played a round of golf together, and we played Olympia Fields. Let me see if I can sneak in one more. Kyle in California. Hey, Kyle.
Hey, DP. Good morning, hey, boys. I, this weekend, first of all, best and worst, Jamal Murray, holy smokes. I mean, that guy has been really impressive.
Yep.
He looks like a star in the making. When he pulled up on that fast break, 3-on-1, and yanked that three, I was like, all right, this guy's here to stay. Worst of the weekend, Friday afternoon, listen to the podcast, on the beach, sun, girls, Fritzy's bagel story pops up. I get through the whole 7 minutes. I'm like, did I miss something? And then I go back, listen to it again. No, I did an onion bagel. Maybe your wife just decided to discontinue it. She's sick of your breath smelling like onion and garlic, Fritzy. Try cinnamon sugar.
Wow. Okay. That's Kyle.
Bringing it on a Monday.
Well, you did spend a lot of time without really an ending to your onion bagel.
Yeah, but I didn't say it was like a joke. I had to have some kind of punchline. I was sharing an experience.
Jim Boeheim, Syracuse head coach, on the passing of John Thompson, and we'll check in with the Lakers as well.